And welcome again to Brewcrew Online. I am Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And with really only less than, I believe, 2 weeks to go till the regular season starts, you know, the Brewers, it hasn't been the best of journeys in spring training, but, I mean, we don't really count records as really meaning anything. But we have seen some impressive players, no doubt. You know, Blake Lively, who's done really good. Hiram Burgess did really well in the World Baseball Classic. So, I mean, there have been a lot of impressive players that we didn't really think were going to pop out. So, I mean, Chris Davis kept hitting home runs back-to-back. Jed Rowley came in, I think, pitched a few innings and did really well. Michael Olmstead's been really good. I mean, it's just been really positive so far with a lot of these, you know, guys who are fighting for 40-man spots, if not already on the 40-man roster.
Right. It's, No, it's been interesting to see how people, you know, people like Blake Lally who've stepped up big time. And I mean, it's unfortunate in you know, like Lally's case or Davis and Schaefer and Gindel to a large extent. We don't have room for these guys, really, you know, on the active roster. But they put in a fantastic show. And, you know, that type of thing helps, too, to get people... You get the whole team ready. You know, people do have to step up and kind of make those adjustments.
You know, and more so for guys like Lely and Schaefer, especially in Lely's case, being that I read a few days ago or a week ago that Reinicke was considering him for first base, but, you know, with the transition there, obviously Alex Gonzalez is probably going to have more say in that until Corey Hart comes back. But, I mean, he wouldn't be a bad option considering he's played the major leagues before with the Cubs last year. He had some time at first. And, I mean, he's doing really well in the minor league so far, batting 364.
Yeah, no, he's been doing fantastic. And it wouldn't – I mean, I'm not against him being, you know, a fill-in first baseman. But I would imagine that the Brewers have some vested interest in keeping Gonzalez in the lineup, getting him at-bats as much as they can if he's going to be a fill-in. Because Gene Segura hasn't had a full season as a starting shortstop. So I would imagine that keeping Gonzalez sharp is probably more important to them than putting Lally at first base.
Yeah, because then you have to wonder, behind Gonzalez at first and behind Segura at short, who is the utility guy? Is it Bianchi? Is it Lally? Is it Green? And that's a question that I think... We might know the answer to, but it's hard to tell at this point because the Brewers have always been tried to be really versatile with utility guys, and
right,
you know, for the most part, it was kind of successful last year. Not really, because Bianchi didn't get a hit for so long and everybody was worried about him. Green did pretty well, but you know, going beyond that, it's really hard to tell how they're going to do this year because you look at what Taylor Green's done in spring training so far. He's batting 139 in 15 games. 12 strikeouts, and it's not looking really that great for Taylor Green.
No. And it's difficult to... Taylor Green's always been an odd case because, you know, we've mentioned this in the past, that Taylor Green basically fits the profile of your replacement-level player, if you'd like to say that. He's basically a career utility man, which there's nothing wrong with. And at the end of the day, his ability to play third base, short if we need him to, or first base, probably trumps a poor spring training. And really what happened is, when Gamel went down, it kind of threw a wrench in the system. Because he was someone who they were working on him filling out in the outfield. He has obviously experience at first base. He has obviously experience at third base, though I don't think anyone wants to see him play at third base. And when he went down, I think it changed a lot of things for a lot of what the Brewers' designs for the seasons were.
Yeah, because, you know, the Brewers, like you said, were focusing on Matt Gamel coming off of an ACL injury, you know, focusing him for first base, especially with the news of Corey Hart not being there for a little bit. They're thinking, okay, we have Gamel, we can play him at first. Oh crap, he just tore his ACL again. So, you know, then they have to realize that first base has now become a huge, huge void. There has really been no confirmation as to who's going to play the position yet. You know, all we can do is really speculate. Alex Gonzalez is probably the most heavily favored for it. But, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. Gamble getting injured threw an absolute wrench into the system because the Brewers were not prepared for it. They were prepared for replacing Corey Hart, not for replacing Matt Gamble.
Right. And that's, I mean, like you said, it's all but decided that Alex Gonzalez is going to start at first base. It was fun to think that maybe Hunter Morris could do it, but to be honest, we all knew he wasn't ready. And, well, when he left spring training, it caused a little bit of a ripple amongst Brewers fans who were so ready for Morris to take the reins as the first baseman from here until eternity. But it's just not going to happen, you know?
At least not yet. You know, Morris is a young player. You know, he still has another year. I think another year, maybe half a year in AAA, depending on how he does. But you don't want to rush him up here and
right.
possibly end up ruining his career by doing that. Because a player like Hunter Morris, and we've seen this before happen with so many other players, is they're always a really highly talented prospect. They get up to the major leagues and you never hear about them again. And then 2 years they're selling cars or something. Because they just couldn't find a major league career. You
right.
don't want to rush somebody like Hunter Morris up here. You want to take your time with him. You want to mold him into that first baseman or maybe third baseman once Ramirez's contract is up, and I don't know if they might re-sign him or not. You know, you want to have Hunter Morris fit that mold of whatever it is. He's a good hitter in AAA. You know,
Double A. He hasn't been up to AAA yet.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. He was a really good hitter in Double-A. He did well in spring training. You know, once he gets to Triple-A and he will start the season there, I think he'll be fine because he could handle it spring training. He could handle Double-A ball. So maybe we see another year, year and a half out of him there. But, no, I just don't think rushing him up there is necessarily the best thing the Brewers should do.
Right. There aren't many people that are going to argue that point against you, so don't worry about that. But I will say, in seeing this spring training, having an infield with Hunter Morris, Scooter Gennett, and Gene Segura doesn't seem like a bad idea.
No.
About 2 or 3 years down the road, it should be very fun.
No, Scooter Gennett in particular has been kind of, you know, I think the unofficial bandwagon, because everybody's hopping on Morris and hopping on Olmstead about it. But, you know, he didn't do that great in the spring training so far. He's only played in 15 games. He's batting .200. But, you know, Scooter Gennett's a very interesting character because he's only 22 years old. So he has a lot of time to still, you know, improve his game to where he needs to be, especially in the majors with the Brewers someday. But no, Scooter Gennett's a very interesting character. He can play second, he can play short, he can play third, he can play really anywhere in the infield.
Right. There are some concerns about his lateral movement for short. He doesn't quite have the range for short that he would for second base, but that's kind of a moot point now if we can lock up Segura.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that's been particularly fun about this spring training is with the World Baseball Classic, getting to see a whole heck of a lot of guys like Chris Davis, of Logan Schaefer, you know, it's been awesome to get to know these prospects, basically.
Yeah, you know, watching the World Baseball Classic in particular, the one prospect I was probably impressed with the most was probably Hiram Burgess. I was just so impressed with every time he went up for Puerto Rico. You know, he pitched the one game, I think he pitched 4 2/3 innings and did really well. And he just looked really good every time he went out.
Very clean, very, very good, yeah. It was great to watch. And those are some high-pressure situations he was in, too. And, you know, say what you will about the World Baseball Classic, but, I mean, you saw the way the fans came out to watch those games. And it was, you know that those players can feel that, you know? And so for a guy like Burgos to step up and pitch the way that he did on that stage was very impressive.
Yeah, because he's not only representing his team, he's representing his country.
Right.
That's a huge thing. It's not like, you know, in America where you know, everybody's used to you playing for 8-9 months out of a year. No, you're playing in a foreign country representing your country that, you know, yeah, there are some players from that country in this league, but, you know, there are players from Venezuela, players from the Dominican, players from Japan. So, I mean, I'm not saying Puerto Rico is a very small portion of Major League Baseball, but for him to be a part of that roster and, you know, have that Puerto Rico across his chest, you know, that's something huge for him as well. And the fact and the fact that he did well in that situation, that speaks really good for his future as a Brewer.
I couldn't agree more. He's a guy we've been following, you know, well, Brewers fans that follow the minor leagues. He's a guy, obviously, that you've been keeping your eye on. He's an organizational all-star. He's been putting together a lot of fantastic performances in a very short career. And, you know, it's getting to that time where he's reaching the threshold of whether or not he's going to actually make it onto the Brewers. I think he's going to do great if he can even bring half of his performance from the World Baseball Classic. We're in good shape with him.
I mean, because you look at Burgess's 2012, he pitched in advanced A ball, he pitched in double A ball, and he pitched in triple A ball, all of which he did really good in. He only had 8 starts in triple A, but in those 8 starts, he went 2-2, 2.91 ERA, and he had a K-9 ratio of 6.8. So, I mean, he's doing pretty well in AAA ball, and if he can still handle that into this season, then I think we won't see him soon, but maybe he might be a September call-up, definitely. But, you know, if Burgess can continue that for this year, I think we definitely see him on the 25-man in 2014.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on the September call-up route here, we have, I wouldn't say an embarrassment of riches necessarily in our pitching staff, but I mean, we have plenty of options, and I think our September call-ups this year are probably going to be more pitcher heavy than anything else. I mean, our offense is essentially as set as you can get in Major League Baseball, and probably as competent as you're going to find in the National League, at least. So I think most of the moves you're going to see in terms of, you know, options and moving people up and down from AAA, it's going to be pitching this year.
Yeah, definitely, because with guys like Hiram Burgess and Taylor Youngman, you know, they're going to have their shots to really, you know, get their feet wet a little bit in Major League Baseball. Because like you said, our offense is really set. I mean, you even look beyond our starters, and you look even into the farm, you know, Hunter Morris, excuse me, you know, backups like Logan Schaefer. I mean, Taylor Green, I'm sure, can turn it around. I mean, you don't have guys who are incompetent of Major League Baseball. You have guys that are either on the threshold of getting up here or who have been up here and have done fairly well at it. So I'm not concerned with the offense at all. But right. I think the pitching definitely, with it being so really new, especially this season, you have two pitchers in the rotation who have had major league experience for multiple years. Three who haven't. One who's only ever pitched in September. You have a bullpen that's fairly new, not necessarily to baseball, but to themselves and to each other.
Right, it's a system.
So, yeah, I definitely think, like you said, when it gets to September, we're going to see a lot of pitcher call-ups because the Brewers need to still mix and match who they want as a starter, as a bullpen guy, because while they have it set now, it's still subject to change.
Right. Speaking of subject to change, we should probably touch on the rotation a little bit.
Nice segue there.
By Ron Renneke. Number one, obviously, is going to be Ivani Gallardo. Estrada sneaks in at number two. Peralta is your number three pitcher. Chris Narvison is 4, and then Mike Fiers is 5. How do you see this rotation shaken out?
I like it, you know, because if Fiers were to do in 2013 what he did in 2012, let's say the first half of when he started, you'd have boom, Gallardo, boom, Estrada, boom, Fires. And then you'd have question marks with Narvison and Peralta. Because while Peralta did well in September, I still don't think that's a huge indication of how he's going to do in 2013. Because you look at how he did in AAA, and it was okay. It wasn't spectacular. But I like him as number three because there's a good balance there. Because, you know, if he doesn't do well, then yeah, you can switch him out for somebody else. But I think it's a perfectly balanced rotation right now because you don't have all your heavy hitters as 1-2-3. You have them spread out. And, you know, obviously there are teams that can get away with that. The Giants are an example of that. The Nationals are an example of that. Even the Yankees, for some degree, are an example of that with 1-2-3 pitchers that do really well. The Brewers, I think, have a month in April to test this out, see how it works. And if Peralta does well, then you keep him. But if Fires does well, I think you still keep him as a five, because you need Narvis in this rotation as a lefty and being one of the three on the entire pitching staff because of the two bullpen guys.
Right.
So I definitely like the way Reneke aligned this.
Yeah, keeping Narvis at four was a smart move, I think. Again, you want that lefty presence in your rotation if you can get it. I don't think it's absolutely necessary. Like, you shouldn't have to hit the scrap pile to grab a left-handed starter. But, you know, having him at the four spot is very nice. Peralta at three is a big vote of confidence for what he did last season. And I think he's going to do okay there. I think in the three spot's not a bad place for him. Fires at five is good for him because he was so inconsistent. But yeah, just the top of the rotation, just Gallardo and Estrada, is gonna put a big damper on a lot of series for a lot of opposing teams, I think, if they can even bring half of what they brought last year.
Cause you figure, you know, Peralta, if he does well, Narvison has average success. It's success, but it's average. He can go six and two-thirds innings. He might give up three runs along the way, but he'll still keep you in the game. And then if Fires is on, this is a rotation that can really shut down some good lineups.
Right. What you're talking about basically with Gallardo and Estrada is you're essentially talking about a quality start almost every time they come out. You know? And no better way to give your team a chance to win than when you have guys like that in the entire series, basically. So, I mean, it's going to be, and again, if they can even do half of what they did last year, I mean, Gallardo, I don't want to say he's a lock for 200 strikeouts, but he hasn't proven me wrong on that front yet. So, you have that, and you have, between the two of them, you have a couple dozen quality starts. I mean, this team has a real chance to win a lot of games with just those two. And then you throw in Narvison, who can, like you said, keep you hanging in a game. And the wild cards are really Peralta and Fires, but it's not like there's a lack of confidence there. And it was interesting because as we started the offseason, basically, if we thought that the Brewers would win 75 games, that we were going to have a great season. And there was a lot of doubt and a lot of speculation, and it seemed to gel pretty nicely.
Yeah, you know, because this is a team that faced so much adversity last year, especially with the middle of the season and the bullpen imploding game after game. You know, that's going to be a huge thing this season, is we have guys now that can go six innings, seven innings, and not have to tax the bullpen game after game, especially a really, you know, broken bullpen that the system just doesn't work. And this is a bullpen now that has proven relievers. It has Tom Guarzolani. It has Mike Gonzalez. It has Burke Badenhop. And if you need him, it has Brandon Kinsler. It has probably Mark Rogers. And then Henderson and Axford. This is a much better bullpen. And I'll say this on, it is a much better bullpen on paper because it hasn't actually worked together yet.
Right.
But I definitely think it's going to be a lot better than last year. We're not going to have the explosions from Varus. We're not going to have the explosions from K-Rod and Parra. So I definitely think that this is a rotation that can help the bullpen out by going six, seven innings, and that can do that on a fairly common basis. I mean, you look at Chris Narvison yesterday when he started against the Giants. He went six innings allowed one hit. That was it. He didn't walk anybody, didn't hit anybody, and he struck out four.
Yeah, he looked absolutely fantastic. If we, a lot of the starters have looked really good this year, so...
You know, if we can get those starts out of them, this is a team that I think could give the Reds a run for their money for first. I really believe that, because we saw last year how good the Brewers can get, especially from about mid-August on. Everything connected. And if you give the Brewers about five more games of doing that, they made the playoffs last year. So if they if they can capitalize on those mistakes from last year into this year, especially with the newly reformed bullpen and this really, I don't want to call it a wild card rotation because we don't know exactly how Estrada, Fires, and Peralta are going to do because they've only had less than 1 year's experience pitching in the major leagues starting on a regular basis. And it's going to be interesting, but if this is a team that can lock themselves in early, I definitely see them getting into the playoffs this year.
There's a lot of conditional, a lot of conditional qualifications for the Brewers to get to the playoffs, but and it's hard to go through, you know, what's just homerism versus what this team is actually capable of.
Yeah.
But we've seen what they're capable of. We saw it in September, and I mean, it's essentially the same, minus the bullpen, it's essentially the same team that we saw in September. So, I can't see it getting any worse, you know?
No.
And I think the playoffs are a distinct possibility. I think a wild card is a distinct possibility. And there are a lot of people, actually, who would agree with us, not necessarily as loudly as we're saying it. But the Brewers are going to be a team to watch this year. So long as they can fire on all cylinders on a fairly regular basis.
And I don't want anybody, any Milwaukee fans out there to come to my house and beat me with a bat for saying this, but I'm not giving the Brewers a lock for the playoffs or the wild card, but I'm giving them a high chance for it, because you have to factor in, this is still a division that has the Reds, that has the Cardinals. You know, the Pirates, I think, eventually are going to break out of the slump one way or another. I mean, they're not going to go on the 21 years of not getting over 500. They're going to break out of that sooner than later. And even the Cubs, I think, can start to turn it around a little bit. So, I mean, this is still a fairly competitive division, especially when you factor in the top two with the Reds and the Cardinals. But you factor in the Brewers, I think the Brewers can overtake the Cardinals easily. Because this is a Cardinals team now that you're looking at that doesn't have Chris Carpenter, has to rely on Adam Wainwright, doesn't have Kyle Loesch. And, you know, they did well when they lost Albert. I'll give them that. But, you know, where do you define luck and success? Is what the Brewers had last year luck, or is it success through finally realizing, hey, look what we did in 2011. Let's get our butts in the gear. Let's try to do it again. And they almost did.
Yeah, no, and it's, I mean... The old saying in baseball is, you know, the best team is going to lose a third of its games, and even the worst team is going to win a third of its games, and it's what you do with that extra third that counts. And that basically comes down to taking advantage of opportunities. And that is something that the Brewers did really well in the latter part of the season in 2011, and didn't do very good at all in the first part of 2011. So, you know, and I think this team is ready now to start taking more advantage of those opportunities. Obviously, you have Braun and Ramirez, who are just insane in terms of RBIs, in terms of, you know, hitting for power on extra bases. If Jonathan Lucroy can be even close to as good as he was with runners in scoring position last year, you know, I think that, and that's what it comes down to, the team's batting average with runners in scoring position was just atrocious for most of 2011. And when they turned that around, the team ended up doing really well. You give pitchers comfortable positions to pitch in. Once the defense starts firing, you know, at a higher level, you start to be able to take advantage of more of those opportunities. And that's really what it's about at the end of the day. So,
you know, and looking up and down the lineup, I don't know that I really see any holes in it, honestly. You know, obviously the biggest one, the biggest person who's got a question mark next to my name is Gene Segura, because he played about half a season last year. So we don't know exactly how he's going to deal offensively into this season. But, I mean, you look up and down this lineup. You go Aoki, Weeks, Braun, Ramirez, Luke Roy, Segura, Gonzalez,
Gomez.
I mean, there really are no holes in this lineup, really. And even if you put in Gallardo when he pitches, he can still hit too. So I was playing the show the other day, and Gallardo went 2-for-3 with a double, a single, and 3 RBIs. And I'm like, this is pretty realistic because Gallardo can do it. He can hit home runs. You know, he has some power.
He's done it before.
And you know, lightheartedness aside, I'm not saying this whole discussion isn't really lighthearted. I'm just saying this is a team that we know they are offensively sound. They are very, very, very good offensively. And, you know, pitching-wise, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be an interesting battle because if they don't do well, then we might see a little bit more out of the September call-ups. If they do well, then this is a team that's headed for really good success in the coming years because they'll have found that niche that they're comfortable with. Because, like you said, if Peralta really does well, this is a really deadly top three then.
Right.
So, I mean, you have Axford as a closer who, despite the offseason last year, still managed 36 saves after a 45-save season. So, I mean, it's not like Axford's a slouch to, you know, the closer role. He's still very good. And even
right.
He has a few off days, and he can put in Henderson. So, I mean, this team realized that, hey, you know, we had mistakes last year, so they're trying to capitalize on those mistakes and turn them into successes, which I think, for the most part, they're doing really well because we all scratched our heads and wondered, well, why in the hell did they sign this guy? You know, why did they sign, you know, Tom Guarzalani? And you realize all of a sudden he's not that bad of an option. Then you sign Mike Gonzalez and you add two lefties to the bullpen and you add right. Burke Badenhop in there. And, you know, this is a team that ideally we'd like to see make a playoff run, but realistically we have to watch how it even pans out because we can talk all about now how good they're going to be, but once April 1st hits, that's when we'll actually see how this team's going to do.
Right. And, well, at the end of the day, too, it's it seems like pretty basic stuff, but when these pitchers, you know, when Mike Fiers, when John Axford, in specific, when those two, when they start attacking batters, you know, really trying to get out ahead of them instead of dancing around and trying to, you know, play games on the corners, they end up doing a lot better. After Fiers got rattled, he wasn't as fearless on the mound after that Colorado game. You know, Axford lost his confidence a little bit in the middle of the season, and it killed him. But you saw in the end when he was 13 for 14 saves or something like that, I mean, he was getting after him. He was firing fastballs into the strike zone. He wasn't trying to dance around with his breaking stuff as much. He was using fastballs to set up his other pitches. It's a completely different game when he does that. You know, he's untouchable when he goes out and really attacks hitters. And he gets that first strike, and that at-bat's basically over. And that's, more than anything, that's what the Brewers pitching staff as a unit has to be able to do, is to go out and just attack these people and pitch without fear, basically.
Yeah, and this is a team that can definitely instill that fear, because you look at them post All-Star game last season, and they were pretty much the best team in baseball. They did everything right, and that success can easily be capitalized on this season. So, you know, a lot of it is going to be, you know, this is what I'm going to throw out as a disclaimer here, Brewers fans. If they do well, great. If they don't be surprised, because we, like I said, we can talk about how well they're going to do and things like that, but we need to actually see how well they mesh together. And this is a trial and run season. Trial and error season, because we're playing with a lot of new key components to this team that we didn't have last year. So you can't just expect them right out of the gate to be 90-game winners. It might take a year or two. But even so, it's still a step in the right direction.
Right. And really, in the middle part of that season last year, I think what you saw a lot was you saw an offense that wasn't firing on all cylinders for that really dreadful, you know, going into the All-Star break and right out of the All-Star break. They did not perform well as an offense. And when you do that, you know, when you're facing a game that's 0-0 into the eighth inning or into the seventh or into the sixth, well, you know, when your relievers start to come in, what you're doing is you're forcing the pitchers to try to pitch perfectly. That's when mistakes get made because a pitcher can't pitch perfectly. It's just not possible, you know? But when an offense gives the team a chance to win, you know, there's not as much riding on the bullpen's shoulders, which, you know, when you have nice, relaxed, comfortable pitchers, you have pitchers that pitch better. That's just, I mean, that's basically science. So, you know, that's really what it has to be. I mean, in the middle part of the season, the offense did not give the team a chance to win. And when the offense doesn't give a team a chance to win, the pitchers can't really do anything.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, because this was already a nerve-wracked bullpen as it was. And, I mean, the offense, with not really doing anything and just relying really on Ryan Braun last year, took the nerves of the bullpen and just, like, completely shattered them. And, you know, I don't see that happening this year, because you look at specifically Gorzelani and Gonzalez, who both came from the Nationals. You know, they helped turn that team around. They helped get that team, I'm not saying they in particular, but I'm saying they were part of a team that turned around, that got to the playoffs. It was very successful last year. I mean, they at one point were running away with the NL East. So this is a team that has decent experience that, you know, garnered, you know, guys from a newly formed successful team. So if the Brewers can take that and have that transition into this year, then there's going to be not a whole lot of problems here. I mean, yeah, obviously there's going to be a few slump games here and there. Guys aren't going to be as electric. The pitching's going to be a little shaky at times. But, I mean, you expect that to happen in a season. Nobody is perfect. And, you know, a lot of it depends on really how the team responds to where they are. If they're doing bad, then they're going to try to do things better. But are they going to be putting too much pressure on themselves? If they're doing well, they just have to be humble about it. They can't let it get over their heads. And I don't think that's really a problem with this team. I think the problem with it was they just self-imploded too much. But with that kind of gone, I mean, it's not really a problem, because I think when you look at what Axford did last year, I'm not saying this because I don't know Axford personally. I don't know what he was thinking, what his mentality was. But I think just by watching him, the way he pitched was a negative impact from the way the rest of the bullpen was pitching. I think if the bullpen was pitching well, we wouldn't have seen Axford struggle. I think it was a negative rebound.
Yeah, and I don't think there's... I mean, you're not going to get very many arguments that that baseball is a game of momentum. Baseball is a game of rhythms, and for a large part, it's a game of attitudes. And I think the attitude for the bullpen was not a great one. I mean, there was a ton of public pressure on them, Axford in particular. And again, you know, they're coming out in situations that's really difficult. You had starting pitchers that would suddenly turn, you know, a three-run lead into a tie in a single inning, and then the bullpen has to go in and essentially fix it, which obviously isn't outside of the bounds of their job description, but at the same time, you have a lot of bad breaks, and you have a lot of momentum and rhythm not going your way, and that definitely affects it. I can't say for sure that that isn't going to happen this year, but I can say now that, you know, I think some of the pressure is off that bullpen because, let's face it, a lot of the bad seeds are gone. You know, you had Henderson and Axford that still struggled, that are still around, but, you know, at the end of the day, though, Axford especially is basically the leader of that bullpen. So you can't really just get rid of a guy like that. Plus, you don't want to get rid of a guy who put up 40-some saves and then 36 saves. in 2 years. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be difficult for the Brewers. It's going to be a hard road, especially for that bullpen. But, like I said, I think if that offense gives them the run power we know that they can, and the pitching just hangs in there, basically, you're going to see a lot of wins out of this team. I won't say we're going to get close to the 96 that we had in 2011, but you're going to see a very surprising season, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be all as doom and gloom as some people thought it might be after last season, especially when you ended on that really good note, you know, almost getting into the playoffs. I think that's a huge motivator for this team into this year. And, you know, like you said, Henderson and Axford struggled a bit, but they were probably the two best pitchers we had in the bullpen. And when Henderson came up, he kind of really took that bad seat away a little bit, and I think he's what helped Axford realize, hey, you know, I can get these 15 saves in a row, and he did, you know, because Henderson stepped in as a closer at some times when he decided Axford wasn't able to pitch, and Henderson did well, and then Axford rebounded back. And I think those two were two people we definitely needed to keep going forward.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, at the end of the day, hunger is a very good discipline. You know, when you think you're going to lose your job, you tend to perform a little better, and you tend to get a little sharper because you don't really have a choice. Not that I believe that everyone should be on the hook to get fired, you know, for 162 games, but at the end, I mean, that was a huge motivator, and I don't think there was any question about that in terms of Axford's performance.
Not at all. You know, moving on from the bullpen and really pitching-wise, the one thing that I think really needs to be talked about is about a week ago, a few days ago, whatever, the Brewers extended Carlos Gomez for, what was it, I believe 3 years, $28 million?
Yes.
And, you know, I am completely content with this move. I think it's a genius move considering how well Carlos Gomez has done with the Mets, with the Twins, and now with the Brewers. He's a power guy for the most part. He's a good speed guy, good, you know, center fielder. And I'm happy that we re-signed him for that, but in the same regards, it really makes me question the future of Logan Schaefer. And what do the Brewers do with Logan Schaefer now? Is he just a backup? Do the Brewers try and trade him? What do they do with him?
Well, first off, on the extension, I mean, really, that extension's kind of a win-win for everybody. It's not super expensive, so there's not a lot riding on Gomez's performance. There's not a lot of pressure on him, rather, is a better way to say it. It's not like he got a Pujols deal or a Braun extension or something like that. He, you know, if he performs well, awesome. We got him at a great deal if his power and his, you know, his tools continue to sharpen over the next 3 years. We got him for a song. And if he doesn't do well, we took a chance on a player that we had right in front of us that was doing really well in the major league level. You couldn't not do it, basically. I think it was a great deal. In terms of Schaefer, I mean, again, you had Gomez right in front of you doing well. You couldn't, it's more difficult. It's a bigger risk to say, okay, let's throw Schaefer in there and see how he does it. Because that's something that might actually end up costing you games when you know that Carlos Gomez isn't going to be a detriment to your lineup or to your outfield. I like Schaefer a lot. He had a fantastic spring. He's done well for a few years in this system. And it would be nice to see him on the field at Miller Park. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, if a deal comes along that they can get a really good player by trading away, you know, Schaefer as part of a package, you have to take it. That's just the way baseball works. But for now, I don't think there's anything wrong with keeping him in the system and seeing how he continues to develop.
Yeah, you know, I was just a little bit curious about it because, you know, obviously Schaefer and Gomez are completely two different players. Gomez is obviously a more proven player than Schaefer because Schaefer hasn't had as much time. And, you know, like you said, for Gomez, if he doesn't do well, oh well, we thought at the time he would. So it's not like it's a really bad signing. It's not like we signed him for 7 years, $180 million, and he just doesn't do anything. You know,
right?
Not like Milwaukee has the money to do that anyway. But no, I think Gomez is going to make a solid center fielder. He's still a pretty decent threat with a bat. I think he's more of a threat on the bases as well. And plus, you combine him with Aoki, and that makes a really, really good outfield with Braun as well. And especially on the bases, because they're all three of them are pretty good base stealers.
Yeah. And, well, you've seen, like, well, Kurt did that that article of our favorite Carlos Gomez moments. And in jest, I picked the imaginary home run where he got to basically third base before he realized it was a foul ball, which I just thought was hilarious. But then I was at that the Diamondbacks game where he scored the walk-off run because he stole third base. And the ball was overthrown in the stands, and he, you know, basically got to walk home. And it shows you the kind of psychological impact he has on pitchers and catchers. And for people that don't believe, you know, base stealing and hitting runs and bunts and those sorts of things, that don't believe that those are as vital a part of baseball, you only need to look at Carlos Gomez to see the kind of impact they can have on a game. You know, when he's on base, he gives you something extra to worry about, and that's a very important thing, especially for a team like the Brewers, where the top of the lineup, you know, up until Braun and Ramirez, is a speed lineup.
Yeah, and I'm not going to necessarily compare him to this guy, but I think the mentality is the same as Mike Trout.
Mm-hmm.
And you look how many times Mike Trout put himself into position to get... you know, home, for guys to hit him in. Carlos Gomez did the same exact thing. And, you know, for a Milwaukee team that really has trouble, or had trouble, hitting with runners on, you know, Gomez putting himself in a situation with an out to go, or, you know, no outs and he's on third, you know, you hit that fly ball, he scores. So, I mean, for him to do that, that really brings a lot for this team. Especially the fact that you'd have to look where he is if he's in the bottom part of the lineup. You know, say he bats 7th and Alex Gonzalez is behind him. Gonzalez hits a little blue pit, Gomez scores. Then you go to the pitcher, you know, no big deal, they probably hit Gonzalez over, and then you go to the top of the order. And this really is a good thing. And it's not that I think Jose Gomez can't hit anywhere else in the lineup, but I just think he's more valuable as like a 6th, 7th guy in the lineup. Just the fact that if he gets on base, he can steal bases, because if you have Segura or Gonzalez or whoever's below him in the lineup to hit him over or in, that's huge.
Right, and I think putting Lucroy around him is probably a good idea too. Probably more so than Segura at this point, just because, again, Segura's not... I don't want to say he's unproven, because that sounds like I'm discrediting what he did last year. But you have a guy in Lucroy that can certainly move people over. And having a guy like Gomez hit in front of Lucroy is probably going to give them something extra to worry about. I think he would do just as well in the bottom third of the lineup as he would in the top third. I almost like him better in the top third, though, because he's a guy that can... he's a proven on-base guy.
Yeah, I mean, potentially you could put him at second, you know, put him behind Aoki, and, you know, Aoki, Gomez, and then Braun. I mean, that would work. And then you put Weeks, you know, around 5 or 6, you know, down there with Lucroy. You know, I'm not opposed to that at all. I think that's actually a really good idea, Colin.
Yeah, it's a... I've been tinkering with the... I'm going to wait until Renicky makes the lineup official, but we were going to... I wanted to put on, you know, what I think would be good lineups for the Brewers. And that's always a fascinating discussion, because there are a lot of players like Weeks that don't really... you can't look at Weeks and say, oh, he's a leadoff hitter, or, oh, he's definitely like a 5 or a 6. And Gomez is kind of the same way. Lucroy is turning into one of those people where you can kind of slide him in anywhere. I mean, Aoki's a 1 or a 2. That's pretty much dead set. It's a great problem to have if you're Ron Renicky and you're looking at this Brewers lineup right now.
Yeah, because you have to take in consideration, especially because Ricky Weeks always seemed to bat second, whereas a lot of people prefer Jonathan Lucroy to bat second. And you have to look at Ricky Weeks' 2012 and how it was pretty much the worst season he's had so far. So I don't know if you necessarily want to stick somebody who's really kind of coming off of a bad year that high up into the lineup. Maybe at 6 or 7, because if he doesn't do well, oh well. If he does and he's able to hit some guys that are on in. But, you know, he's not in that vital spot, really.
Right.
So, no, I think if I had to choose a lineup today based on this, I'd probably go Oki, Gomez, Braun, Ramirez, Lucroy, Weeks, Segura, and then Gonzalez. And then, obviously, when Corey Hart comes back, you mix and match him in there. Probably around the heart of the order as well. Heart of the order, pun. But, you know, I mean, I think this could potentially be a very dangerous lineup for most pitching staffs.
Yeah, and I think, to be perfectly honest, I think you can probably flip-flop Ramirez and Braun between the 3 and 4 spot and see no marked difference in the offense. Because those two guys are both, I mean, they're both going to drive in runs. They're both dedicated power extra base guys. There's really no harm in either 3 or 4 for Braun and Ramirez, I think. But that's more, that when you're talking 3, 4, you're pretty much dealing with semantics anyways, so.
Yeah, at some point you're just kind of nitpicking a little bit.
Yeah, I like having Aoki in either 1 or 2. I think he can flip-flop also. Really what it comes down to is guys like Weeks and Gomez, Lucroy, and Hart when he comes back. You know, because those are guys that can fit in either in that 2 spot or, you know, they can be further down. That bottom third of the lineup is going to be very interesting to watch. And, you know, like we said, I think this lineup from 1 to 8 is just stellar right now, at least on paper.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very interesting and very nice to talk about because you can mix and match it in so many different ways, and it still works regardless. It's going to be something that the Brewers are going to go forward with and say, hey, you know, we can put Oki at 2, we can put Oki at 1, we can put Lucroy at 5, we can put Lucroy at 6. You know, it's just something that no matter where you put somebody in this lineup, it's going to produce regardless.
That's the hope, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, that like you said, on paper, that's the hope. But, you know, but seeing how this offense functions, you know, seeing how they did last year and in 2011, it's, I think for those words, a very positive aura that's about this lineup in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Well, there was the one thing, transitioning to another subject now, that you want to talk about, and I'll let you bring that up.
Yeah, for the people that follow the site religiously, keep an eye out. We'll have a more in-depth discussion as soon as I can finish the article, either today or tomorrow. But there was a report by Bob Nightingale in USA Today where he, using people that could only speak on confidentiality in Major League Baseball, and basically opened up another lid on the biogenesis discussion and the fact that it appears Major League Baseball might be getting a little overzealous in their pursuit of Braun and his link to Tony Bosch's clinic. There was talk about giving minor league players and other players involved in a more cursory manner immunity in order to root out stronger evidence against players like Alex Rodriguez and Ryan Braun specifically. And it's just it's an interesting read. I highly recommend it. And Craig Calcaterra and some other people on Hardball Talk have been doing great work on it on its own. But it's something that definitely needs to be discussed because it's kind of the unnamed casualty in this whole discussion is the actual investigative process by Major League Baseball into this biogenesis clinic.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people defined, when you look back at, you know, the Hall of Fame vote and going forward with the biogenesis thing that came out towards the end of January, and you had a lot of names on there that came up that nobody really knew why. You know, you had Nelson Cruz on there, Gio Gonzalez on there. And you can get into the semantics of the whole thing, but, you know, in all actuality, I have to agree with most of the public opinion here and say that it's just a witch hunt, in a sense. I don't get why, if, you know, and I'm not disregarding saying it's not true, but if it is true, why Braun specifically is being targeted. You know, there are other players that have probably bigger links to it than Braun, but, you know, Colin and I were talking before about the show and how, you know, Braun, you know, is not only a face of really Milwaukee Brewer baseball, but before everything came out in December 2011, was one of the biggest faces of baseball in general. So, you know, obviously it makes sense as to why, you know, if it turns out to be true, why he'd be slammed with so much, and why now, you know, even if Ron is clean, because, you know, rationally, logically, we can't say, but, you know, we like to have our own opinions about things, you know, it's going to be a huge slam to Milwaukee if it is true, but it's going to be a huge victory for the MLB.
Right, and at some point, the discussion in Major League Baseball circles, at least the way it appears from this report and from, you know, we've heard whispers like this for months going on, years now, that it might appear more important for Major League Baseball to catch a high-profile star doing this, you know, than to actually clean up the problem. And there's actually talk in the report of Major League Baseball granting immunity to certain players in order to give them more substantial evidence, which flies in the face of a very well-established rule that no tolerance or zero tolerance policy is the best in terms of cleaning up, you know, drug problems in a game. And baseball, to be perfectly honest, and to their credit, they have some of the strongest punishments possible for performance-enhancing drugs. And they're looking at strengthening those policies. But it gets scary when you look at stuff like in this report, the Miami player who played with Ryan Braun, I can't remember his name at this point, was brought in. He's in the minor leagues now. He was brought in to be investigated and to give them more clarity on the biogenesis thing. They told him if he cooperated, he would get immunity. So basically, his cheating is not as important as Braun's cheating. But besides that, he gave them everything he knew. MLB didn't like what he said, apparently. Gave him a 50-game suspension for substance abuse, and then 50 more games for being uncooperative in the investigation. That's a scary precedent to set. That's borderline McCarthyism. And, you know, it really shows that with all the confidentiality leaks, with all of the, you know, back and forth, he said kind of things going on in Major League Baseball's own house and with the union against Major League Baseball, that before anything gets done, Major League Baseball really needs to get its house in order on this.
Yeah, and it's something that obviously isn't going to happen overnight, because this has been an ongoing process that who knows how long it's going to continue on for, because with, you know, players being linked to it and with all these reports coming out, and, you know, I say reports, and they are, you know, quote-unquote reportedly linked to these things, because we don't know for certain.
Right.
You know, Alex Rodriguez obviously came out in 2009 and admitted he took steroids when he was still with the Texas Rangers in 2003. And since then has said he has not been linked or has not done PEDs or steroids since then, though his name comes up, you know, Braun's name comes up. And it's really hard to tell, because as a rational human being and as an irrational baseball fan, you know, you can't make a decision saying, well, he's guilty, he's not. And even if it goes so just beyond, you know, he's guilty, you know, it goes beyond that, because it becomes an integrity issue, really, with baseball, because there are so many things that this game likes to nitpick at and likes to pretend that didn't exist. Like, you look at, like we talked about before, you know, you look at the 40s, they try to pretend that doesn't exist. They try to pretend that, you know, oh, well, that was hundreds of years ago when, you know, it really wasn't. And baseball has a little black history that, I didn't mean to say it like that. I meant to say it like, well, it has a bad history. Not, I'm going to eat my words now. I did not mean to say that. But it has a bad history of trying to cover up the things that, you know, we don't try to think of much today. You know, we look at Hank Aaron and Jackie Robinson, Willie Mays as heroes, really, for what they've done for the game. But in the 40s and 50s, and they were looked upon as, what are they doing in this game? And that's obviously one of the most awful mentalities you can have towards somebody. And then today, you know, we have the steroid issue, the PED issue, which is something that baseball is trying to work at, but I just don't think it's ever going to be solved because it just keeps expanding more and more. And if you have these people, like you said, it almost becomes like McCarthyism. You have these people who you try to get immunity to that are linked with a drug or whatever to try and spell out the end for Ryan Braun. And I don't get the massive witch hunt for one person. I just don't get it. And even then, it's not like Ryan Braun has ever been found guilty of it. So it's really just, it makes Major League Baseball look a little ridiculous here.
Well, and in this specific aspect, I think that a little transparency will go a long way. You know, release the arbitrator's written decision, which they haven't done. Everything else was fine to be totally out in the open, except for his actual opinion. It's the whole thing is confusing. It's you know, they're fine with transparency in some aspects, and they're not fine with it in other aspects. And there's a lot of cursory elements that aren't being discussed here, you know, and it's a troubling issue, and it should be a very, very troubling report for a lot of people to see how basically Major League Baseball is fine to cast aside a lot of its ethics in hopes of solving a larger ethical issue. It's not the way ideally we'd like to see justice done. If Braun's guilty, I'd like to see he deserves to be punished because he broke the rules, you know? But I don't want to see it turn into, I don't want to see it turn into any bigger of a witch hunt than it's already become, basically.
Because if Braun's not guilty, regardless of whether the man's guilty or not, his reputation is tarnished.
Basically ruined.
Basically for the rest of his life. I mean, A-Rod's reputation has been clearly gone out the window. And Braun's reputation is following it right behind it. And that's a shame, especially if Braun is not guilty. That is a huge shame. And Major League Baseball really has done a disservice to Ryan Braun. But, you know, we may never know. So it's just one of those things we have to speculate about. You know, personally, as a Brewers fan, I'd love to see him be clean.
I think many baseball fans would probably agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, because Braun is such a baseball guy, and, you know, he's a very personable guy from what, you know, a lot of people say about him and what I've seen from him. Like, you know, you watch little thing, you know, things, how he talks to the media. He seems very personable. He seems very, you know, willing to cooperate with people and things like that. So, you know, ideally, you'd like to see him be a clean guy. And, you know, but rationally, you know, you don't know. With your heart, you'd like to see it, but with your mind, you just don't know. So, Colin, is there anything else you'd like to say about your article before we hopefully don't tell all of it?
Just keep an eye out for it.
Well, just saw this on Twitter just now. Jim Bowden of ESPN just tweeted that the Brewers GM, Doug Melvin, does not want to forfeit 17th pick in first round to sign Loesch. So, Loesch watch continues.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Loesch is going to be a Brewer. I think he's asking too much, and the Brewers have enough money locked up and enough people right now. And we don't really need the starter. But the speculation will continue wildly until the season begins.
Yeah, because if Loesch isn't signing out, he's not signing with anybody until June. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, he's got to sign quick. I just don't think any team is willing to give up what Loesch's people are asking for, or what the Cardinals are asking for, or whatever.
No, I think it's interesting that nobody signed him with the same regards. I kind of get why.
Right.
Well, guys, our next show will be April 3rd or 4th, and one of the two, we haven't decided yet. But once we do that, that'll be the regular season. So this is our last show of season one. Spanned about 33 episodes. I think this is episode 33, I want to say. So we've done well for this first season, I say.
I think we have. And once our second season of Brew Crew Online begins, we'll also get to hear just how badly I beat up on Benjamin and the rest of the staffers in our fantasy baseball league.
Well, see, it's kind of funny because Colin is really hoping for Yovani Gallardo to have a 200 strikeout season this year. And so am I, because I drafted Gallardo. So after Gallardo completely dismantles Colin's team and throws that perfect game against the Rockies on April 1st, we'll see what happens then. But
I don't even know how many points we get for perfect games, but...
See, you're already up a leg up on me because Chase Headley's going to be out for a month, and he's my third baseman. So...
There you go. I kind of lost my mind in the middle of the draft when I picked my bench. But I no doubt have the strongest fantasy rotation in the league.
I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know if you can beat Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish. I just don't know about that.
I think I will.
Well, because when I picked Hamels, I'm like, it got to a point where it was just Philly after Philly after Philly, and I'm like, I hate the Phillies. And
yeah, it was tough in this league because none of us wanted to pick Cardinals, none of us wanted to pick Reds, although I did get Johnny Cueto, who is going to demolish you, by the way.
Funny.
As we're doing this, I'm looking over my fantasy roster, and I have a lot of draft regret. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about this is gonna be, you know, the April slumps. Really, is we're gonna say, okay, he doesn't do well. Hey, this guy does well. But I will admit this, and this might get me running out of town. And I haven't told anybody this, so this is the first this is coming out. I was a pick away from drafting Jason Mott and almost did, but I decided not to draft him.
Well, I really wanted Andrew McCutchen on my first pick, and I had the eighth pick in the draft. I thought that would have done me a lot of good, but I picked up Prince Fielder instead. I feel pretty good about that.
Gotta let him go, man. Just gotta let him
go. I have a lot of Brewers. I have Marco Estrada, Jonathan Lucroy, and Nori Aoki.
Well, see, I think Steven really is the best Brewer fan here, considering I think 40% of his team is Brewers.
Yeah, and he named his team after Aoki, and he didn't pick him up. He had two picks ahead of me, and he didn't pick Aoki up. He should get fined for that, I think.
Well, I think my team's all brains and brawn. I didn't get Ryan Braun. He got Ryan Braun, very first pick. So there's that, but we want to thank the people who, everybody really who wanted to be in the league and the people that are in, you know, we're happy about that. Is the Brewers bracket thing still going on?
Yeah, we are finishing up the first round throughout this weekend, and then it'll get a lot more heated and it'll move a lot more quicker. The decision to go 64 Brewers might have seemed like overkill, but it's the only way we could have gotten the best field.
Yeah, who needs actual merch madness when you have Brewer merch madness?
Oh, and it's insane too. We got some pretty nice upsets actually. Okay. We'll the next couple days the first round will be done, and we'll be able to see for sure who the winners are emerging through the field.
What's the latest matchup right now?
The latest matchup right now is. Ooh, we have a 2-seed going against a 15-seed. We have Ben Sheets up against Dale Swaim.
And
Ben Sheets being your 2-seed, Dale Swaim being your 15.
And to vote for that, Brewers fans, just say who you want to vote for alongside Brewers Bracket and tweet it to Reviewing the Brew. That's Review without the second I, the Brew, on Twitter. And say who you want to vote for and say Brewers Bracket. So, you know, we want to get as many votes as we can for this because this is a really cool idea that Colin came up with. So.
Yeah, and once we get through the first round, we're gonna hype it up even more on Facebook and Twitter, and you're gonna get real annoyed. So you might as well get your votes in.
Exactly, that's what we do here. All right, guys. So the next time we see you, it will be beginning of the season. We start against the Rockies, for those of you who don't know, in Milwaukee. So hopefully the Brewers can take an early sweep, but, you know, it's baseball. You don't know what can happen. So
it's here, guys. Get ready for it. We'll see you next week.
All right. All right, see you guys later.